Welcome to These Three Remain, a podcast sharing stories of faith, hope and love from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. My name is Rick Hill and I'm the host of this podcast. Please subscribe to receive future episodes and do share this with others. Today we're bringing you a conversation focused on global mission at this time, and I'm delighted to be joined by some guests who are dialing in from a variety of countries today. And I need to emphasise that this episode is being recorded over a week before it will be released. Now, just before I introduce our guests, we take time at the beginning of each episode to share examples of faith, hope and love that listeners have submitted to us. So Chris Pollock got in touch with this encouraging story. He writes, "Being part of a church family benefits everyone, but last weekend I was personally blessed. It was our prayer weekend at Saintfield Road, where we had the chance to sign up to a virtual prayer chain and spend an hour with God. I was first up on Friday morning. It was a big day for me, finishing a job and moving on to the next part of my life. But the highlight of the day was spending time with God. It was so encouraging to know that every hour of the day over that weekend, someone from Saintfield Road was praying on their knees with God." Hayley Cullen, youth worker in Muckamore Presbyterian, writes, "The youth leaders each sent out cards to the young people in their small groups, including some chocolate and certificates for those who have won any of the challenges we have been taking part in over the last 10 weeks. For those who have been engaging with the various things we have been doing throughout lockdown, we wanted them to know that we have loved spending time with them over Zoom. And for those that haven't, we wanted them to know that we have really missed them and are continually praying for them." And finally, Rachel Haffey, youth worker in Mays, sent this. "Holiday Bible Club is a highlight in our yearly calendar. However, due to restrictions this year, we aren't able to have our normal Bible Club. However, there's no need to miss out, as throughout the month of June, there will be an online Bible Club as we go down on the farm to hear Christ's message. This will be pre-recorded and go out on the Mays Facebook page and YouTube channel every Friday night in June. Each week there will be challenges and activities and worksheets for the children to take part in and send in. We hope this will be a great time for the children to feel a part of something in these difficult days for them, and most importantly, that God will use this to speak into their lives and bring children to Him. And we hope to hear more about that from Rachel and others on our next episode." Now, on to this week's episode, and I'm delighted to be joined by three people who will bring a real global flavour to our conversation. So a big welcome to Peter Lockwood, who's dialing in from Nepal, and James Cochrane, who's speaking to us from Portugal, and Helen Johnson, who's much closer to home, but serves as PCI's Mission Support Officer. Folks, thanks for joining with us. Peter, let's start maybe furthest afield and go to you first. Why don't you introduce yourself to us and tell us who you are, where you are, and what life has been like for you recently?
Well, we're the Lockwood family. My name's Peter, wife Valerie, and we have three teenage children, Connor, Joel, and Aaron. And we're all working and serving in Kathmandu in Nepal. We work with the United Mission to Nepal, and Presbyterian Church in Ireland has had a long association with the United Mission to Nepal. And again, as I say, we're based in Kathmandu, although we have work outside the valley in terms of two hospitals, one in Okudunga, one in Tansen, and also we have 8 regional offices throughout the country. Well, when the sort of coronavirus started taking off and countries were going into lockdown, although Nepal sort of sandwiched between India and China, the cases were really quite low. But the government took a decision on the 24th of March to lock the country down. And so really the international airport, the domestic airports have all closed, all long distance bus journeys have stopped, all vehicle movement within Kathmandu Valley, for instance, has stopped, which actually isn't a bad thing. It's actually quite amazing that sort of 2.5 months into lockdown, the air quality in Kathmandu is noticeably better than what it normally is. But we are restricted. The kids' school closed, so they're now all at homeschool. I'm working from home, so that sort of implies lots of Zoom meetings and telephone calls and lots of checking reports and different bits and pieces like that.
Okay, well, we'll come back to some of the challenges in a moment. James, you're speaking to us today, I think, from your church building. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your context too?
My name is James. I'm married to Heather. We have two daughters. My eldest daughter's just finished her third year at University of Ulster, Belfast. My youngest daughter just completed some AS exams, albeit with a few complications because of lockdown recently. Originally from Korean, been involved with the overseas board since 1986, initially working in Brazil, and then since 2008, been here in Portugal. Currently, we live in the city of Porto, which is the second largest city in Portugal, in the northern part of Portugal. And we moved here in 2013 to be involved in a church plant, a new church established. We call it Living Stones, or Comunidade Pedras Vivas. And it's in collaboration with a small Presbyterian denomination here in Portugal, a denomination of 170 members, a scattering of small churches, 10 pastors and 3 elders. So everything's very, very small in Portugal in terms of the evangelical witness. In terms of what life's been like recently, I actually was in deputation at the end of March when this all kicked off. And I arrived back in Porto on the 16th of March. And Portugal went into a state of emergency on the 20th of March, which meant schools closed. Everything was closed, only allowed out to go to the supermarket or the pharmacy. And to be honest, the Portuguese have really respected the lockdown very, very well. And I think we can see that in light of the figures are still high. It's still 1,140 deaths. However, in comparison to some of our neighbours in this part of the world, it's been a significant reduction in what could have been a very difficult thing. So we moved into a state of calamity on the 3rd of May. Now, I don't know if calamity is worse than emergency. I haven't quite worked that out yet. But what that meant was we began to come out of confinement. And so last Sunday, the 7th of June, we were actually able to hold our first service of public worship since the end of February. We had it here in our new building that we just moved into. First service here, and it was extremely strange. I thought preaching to a video camera in my front room was difficult, but preaching to people with masks on is a very disconcerting experience. Mm. But having said that, we're very thankful beginning to move back towards some sort of normality.
Okay. Well, that's really encouraging in some ways, and we'll reflect on that as we go as well. Helen, we're coming a little bit closer to home. Tell us about what you do in supporting PCI Global Mission Workers overseas, maybe perhaps normally in your role and also at this time.
Well, I'm based in Belfast in Assembly Building, so a lot closer. And my title is Mission Support Officer, Member Care. And most people in the world don't know what on earth that means and what member care is. But it's a role to support global workers, as we've just heard from both Peter and James. It's sort of two parts to it. It's got a HR role, which is really my professional training and experience, my work experience, and it looks after the processes and the procedures that are needed to support people. And then the member care side of it is really aimed at helping global workers to be fruitful, resilient, purposeful, loving, and Christ-centred. So by combining the two principles, I really try to work to support and encourage all of our global workers around the world. And we have 15 families in 10 countries on the 4 continents. To describe my role, I suppose I would use the metaphor of gardening, which I love. And I would say that if you think of a garden, the design of the structure of concrete and wood and concrete paths is the HR side. And then the plants and the produce is the member care side. And those two combined together should produce fruit. So that's kind of what I do. And I have been doing that for the last 15 years.
Brilliant. So Peter and James are like plants. Is that the analogy? Yeah.
It's a very encouraging image. I never really thought I'd use my gardener, Helen.
Brilliant. Helen, you really see a big picture view, I guess. So can you tell us maybe about some of the particular needs or challenges that you've been noticing across the range of mission partners that we're working with as a church?
Yeah, I mean, the coronavirus has been, well, unprecedented, and people have been using that. And I think in this situation, it actually is. I mean, for me, I have I lived and worked in Nepal for 8 years. And during that time, there were a number of crises, like the massacre of the king and lots of curfews. So I've had experience of being in situations where crises are happening in that country. But the rest of the world is pretty stable. Also in this role that I've had been to help in situations, and again, going back to Nepal in 2015 when the earthquake hit, that really obviously affected the country. But I was here and it was in a stable scenario. So the coronavirus, as both Peter and James have said, sort of hit middle of February was the first email that I actually sent out to all the global workers as we started to hear about this and look to China. And then suddenly through March, James was here, got back, thankfully. Peter still in Kathmandu with his family, needing to stay there. And to have all of that happening very rapidly in a few weeks, plus everything shutting down here, was something that I have never experienced before. And it really tested all of the years of experience and the resources that we had, because it's much easier to support people in a crisis situation when you have resources that you know you can rely on and tight and trusted ways of working. But none of that happened. So those few weeks were rapid, rapid change for all of us. And really, I tried to connect with as many of the global workers as possible to really hear how they were, because situations were affecting each one in a different way. Not only, and I'm sure Peter and James can talk about this, but certainly Peter, not only in what was happening to them personally, but what was happening in the country. And the lack of work for daily labourers in Nepal, for example, means they don't eat that night. So it's not just coronavirus. And that has been a big issue for both our workers having to live through that and also our partners having to manage that.
Peter, what have you, is it similar? What have you been seeing? What are some of the needs and challenges that have been coming across in your context?
With the lockdown going in place from the 24th of March, and really all offices having to close, there really was like a diaspora from Kathmandu. So lots of people left Kathmandu to go home to their home villages. But really what you're seeing is the fact that people aren't working. Because people aren't working, then there's an increasing pressure on just sort of daily living. If I talk briefly about our two hospitals, we have one in Tansan and we have one in Okladunga. Both the hospitals are really run on patient revenue. So actually having patients coming through provides money, which allows for the operation of the hospital. And most of the hospital operating cost is just really personnel cost, the staffing. So really the pressure on both hospitals is that there's reduced patients, there's reduced work and reduced revenue. But at the same time, they're also preparing for COVID cases coming, preparing isolation wards and sort of getting ready for a greater outbreak of these things. We also are involved in community development work, and actually that's all stopped. And all our staff have been actually recalled home. But really, our local partners are still in the areas, and there's an awful lot of word which is coming out from there. There's an awful lot of out-migration. A lot of Nepalese leave Nepal every year to go and work. A lot of them go down through into India, but there's a lot of people who work in Malaysia, Singapore, across into the Middle East. And actually, in UMN's work in areas out in provinces 5, 6, and 7, they actually estimate that one in every household is overseas sending money back. And that is a source of income for them. About a third of Nepal's GDP is actually remittance from Nepalese working overseas. And really, since the outbreak, that's all stopped. You then have the second problem of sort of tourism is completely closed down. All the hotels actually said they're not opening until the end of October. There's no climbing, there's no trekking, there's no people visiting. Really, one of the great problems that we see coming is the livelihoods issue. You have a lot of Nepalese returning home, so they're looking for jobs. And really, the ironic thing is they left Nepal in the first place because there isn't sufficient work. Other stories which are coming out is that, you know, we are in an unprecedented situation. We are in a very stressful situation, but there are now stories of increased trafficking and also an increase in domestic violence. So again, there's a real challenge of trying to deal with those, particularly when you're dealing with them remotely.
James, I'm wondering for you, what have been some of the needs and challenges you've been coming across, and maybe how have you continued to respond and to reach out to others throughout this time as well?
Yeah, it's just really interesting to hear exactly what's happening on the ground in Nepal. I mean, our news here is very limited. We hear mostly about Portugal, a little bit about the United States, quite a lot about Brazil, but very little about Asia. So it's very good just to hear what's going on there. And although we are in a part of Europe, we are probably amongst the poorer European countries here in Portugal, and specifically here in the city of Porto, it relies heavily on tourism. The Porto airport basically shut down. There's been no tourists coming to the streets, and so the service industry has been badly affected by that. Coupled with that, we have a situation here in Portugal where in the last 18 months, there have been significant numbers of Brazilians coming from Brazil to Portugal, looking for a new life, looking for a better lifestyle. And many of them in the initial time here end up in the service industry. So they have come to Portugal looking to resettle, looking for a better way of life, a more stable way of life, a more secure way of life. With the coronavirus, their basic form of employment has been taken away from them. So we're beginning to see this within a very small community. A number of people have lost jobs. We have a number of others who have jobs, but they're very tied to the service industry. So they have basically been on a type of furlough situation. So I guess like Peter as well, we probably anticipate going forward, we're going to see the challenge of people actually finding a livelihood being one of the major needs here in Portugal. In terms of health, as I said, the numbers of cases in Portugal is relatively small compared to some of our neighbours here in Europe. Within our local community, we've had no confirmed cases. We had a young couple had their first baby during lockdown, which was quite traumatic for them. Mother was only allowed in the room without anybody else, but thankfully God has seen them through and they have a beautiful baby girl now. I suppose for us as well, the challenge is actually just with being a church plant and being such a fluctuating bunch of people, it's trying to just maintain some sense of fellowship, some sense of family in the midst of being forced not to be together. And that, particularly for our culture here in Portugal, and particularly for the Brazilians coming in, where there isn't that physical contact, there isn't that physical being together, that proved very, very difficult. So we've done what we can. We set up groups on WhatsApp. We try to focus on encouraging people, and it has been really good to see our members stepping up to this and sending individual messages and things. And interestingly, our prayer meeting, which will be on a Wednesday evening, has probably been the best attended that's ever been in the history of CPV, simply because people are at home. They're welcoming this time just to be together and just even to speak and hear other voices. So yeah, challenges going ahead probably in terms of financial security for the future for a lot of our folks and for a lot of the folks in Portugal as well.
I mean, I know many people listening to this would be resonating with much of what you've said, actually, even within our context here in the PCI. Although, James, you said earlier that you had a significant marker last week when you were able to physically gather again as a congregation. Can you tell us maybe a bit more about that experience, maybe even any of your learnings of that? Maybe it's too early for that, but I'm just interested in your learnings in your context that might be helpful for ours at this point.
Well, when this whole lockdown thing kicked off, we had to very quickly move to an online presence, as most people, I think, within PCI have been doing. We sent out recorded sermons. We chose not to go live just because of the technicalities of that, so we pre-recorded and put it on YouTube. And then last Sunday, we had our first gathering since the end of February, as I mentioned. We contacted everybody to see who would be willing or able or feel content to meet together. And we had a significant response from that, which we felt was right then to take that step. But within our little community of about 35, 40 people, some people weren't able to be with us on Sunday because they're in high-risk categories or just don't feel at home. So as well as doing it here in the church building, we had to go live. And the feedback's been very positive to all that. But as I say, it was just very, very strange celebrating the Lord's Supper for the first time. And as a minister, having to go and wash my hands and put gloves on to distribute the bread and the wine, and not being able to hug or to embrace or do anything like that after church. It was fellowship, but it was very, very strange. We were very glad of it, but we certainly came away with the sense there's something really missing here, and you know, we're looking forward to getting back to full fellowship and embracing each other. And just sometimes just a hug says a thousand words is what we found here. And at a time when people are needing that tactile sense of encouragement and belonging, even when we're physically together in the same room, we're not able to do that. So very thankful that we're able to take that step, but we're still aware that there's a lot of ground we need to cover before we get back to having full understanding of communal fellowship together.
So in some ways, there's almost this partially digital, partially physical world for you at the minute. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And I think it's also something that, you know, we're encouraging our folks. We don't want this to become the basis of any division with our church, and that, you know, well, why doesn't everybody come? We just have to respect that there are others who, because of their own health situation, can't. And there are others who, just because of a various series of circumstances, just don't feel confident being with people at this stage. So it's a chance for us to show love and respect for those who feel like that, but also encourage them as much as we can, include them as much as we can.
Peter, this might be a difficult question, but what do you think the path ahead looks like in your setting, or even the present situation for you?
It's really the question which we have been wrestling with constantly over the last couple of months. I mean, the path ahead is one of great uncertainty. I mean, I mentioned earlier about our hospitals, so there's been a lot of work which has been put in to try to ensure that the hospitals continue running, continue providing primary health care, but also prepare for any particular outbreak that might happen. In terms of our cluster work, we know that the work is going to have to change. We know that really a large portion of this is going to be both health related in terms of looking at the COVID-19, but actually community health needs still remain the same. Maternal child health issues are still remaining the same. And also a big effort's going to be made in terms of livelihoods. And so our effort's been made to think about how we can work remotely to support local partners, and also how to do that in sort of a health and safe environment. The other thing which is sort of added into the big mix of working in Nepal, that actually this year was the year for the renewal of all UMN's agreements, which is due on the 15th of July. So we have a general agreement, we have a project agreement, we have our hospitals agreement. And so those also need to be signed to allow us to continue to work in the country. So again, that becomes problematic when government offices aren't meeting. And again, a lot of discussions in Nepal, you know, are really done on a face-to-face basis, just to make sure things happen and get done. But I think, I mean, one of the encouraging signs has been you know, some of our development work, some of our supporting partners from overseas have guaranteed funding at least up to Christmas. So that at least gives us a base to retain staff and also to continue works. But beyond that, it's a degree of uncertainty. So we just keep working away and seeing what we can do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm struck by something James picked up on earlier when he was saying, you were saying, James, about it's difficult to hear maybe more about outside your own context in terms of media and what else is going on in the world. And so I'm thinking that's a danger for us at this time. So Helen, I'm wondering, how do you think maybe congregations at home could be developing their own global awareness or involvement at this time?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think that the real challenge for us at home is to think outside of the current needs and anxieties. And there's been a saying that I've heard a number of times during this crisis, that charity begins at home. And I think this pandemic has really highlighted how much we value local community and family and church. And it's shown us how much we do need to be in contact with others. So I think one good thing that's come out of this horrible virus is the recognition that this is really important and it's valued and it's needed. So where I agree with the statement, charity begins at home, I don't think it should end there. And I would love to see the statement say, charity begins at home and extends much further. So I would encourage everyone really to ask themselves, first of all, how can I connect and care for a community of people who are far from me? And I think this lockdown has shown us that we can actually do that. I have loved how creative we have been, individuals and congregations, how people have used technology, even those who didn't want to use it and who said they never would, including those who aren't very good at using it, but have now got round, or even those who had the intention of using it and have got round to using it now, and have found to their surprise that they've learned a lot, not just about the technology and the medium, but also about family and friends, things that they actually didn't know. So I think out of this creativity that this lockdown has given us, when we find ways to connect in our own communities, but we couldn't visit people, I think that's a really strong foundation for individuals and congregations to reflect on. And for those who do have active global connections with others, they can continue to develop those. And for those who haven't yet discovered that, I would really encourage people to build on this hard work and really to be curious. Ask God, ask Him to help. Look out from your local community, look further, and ask the questions and ask God to show you who He wants you to get interested in, and basically to investigate, to wonder, and to ponder. And Yul Mars is going to love me when I say this, but contact and pester the mission department. Find out, or even other mission agencies. There's plenty of wonderful mission agencies in Northern Ireland with lots of Presbyterians involved in them. So pester them. Have a look at the PCI website. And if you don't already receive it, and you're not already connected into These Three Remain, or you're not already connected into our Global Mission Workers Bulletins, then go to the website and read them. And as you're doing that, just read not only about the information about the worker and about the situation, but really ask God to speak to you, to investigate the context. What is the healthcare system like? Peter has explained quite a lot just this morning about the situation in Nepal. What about all the other countries in the world? How do they get their food? What about education? What about faith? What about community? There's just so many questions, and I think being curious and asking that will strengthen and deepen connections and generate even more interest. Then I'd encourage individuals and congregations to be concerned, to actually be disturbed about what is happening, and ask God to show you His heart for His concern for the world. How has your question and thinking about what has affected you, what has troubled you, what has surprised you that is the same as here? And we've heard some of that from James, the similarities and some of the things. And yet there are things that are very different. And we've heard that as well from Peter. So what's God actually saying to you about those situations? And I think sometimes we can be a little bit overwhelmed. We think of the world, it's huge, all these countries. I said we had, 15 families working in 10 countries and 4 continents. How do you get your head around that? And maybe sometimes we can feel a bit overwhelmed because we think it's all too big for us. But actually, we can do a lot. And there's a saying that says, how do you eat an elephant? Well, the answer is one bite at a time. So sometimes I think we just need to do that one bite to that one conversation, that one prayer, that one step at a time. So I would encourage you to be concerned and disturbed, and I encourage you to be wise. Not everything that's on the internet is true. So I would encourage that as you're particularly people who are initially stepping out and saying, where do I start? Look at credible sources like Tear Fund and Christian Aid. So if you actually have, God has laid on your heart the injustices that happen in some countries, they would be two organisations that you might want to look at their websites. Or our global partners. Peter has mentioned UMN. Every global worker who works with us is connected into the local partners on the ground, and they are a wealth of knowledge and support and learning that we really want to encourage congregations to get involved in. And then my final one would be to be connected or coupled up. And I know being coupled up at the minute is a bit difficult with social distancing, but actually, who do you want to be in relationship with? Where do you want to learn and be connected more than just a geographical location or something fascinating about that culture? Who would you like to get to know better? And relationships that are developed are a two-way street. And I really feel that this pandemic has shown us we've come from privileged parts of the world where we can jump onto a plane and to go to many places, anywhere we really want to. Now that we can't actually do that, we're on the same level as many, many, many people around the world who have not got that opportunity, who can never get on a plane. And many of our brothers and sisters and believers around the world, and the partners that we work with, and the people of whom James works with, and the people who Peter works with, will never have that opportunity. They will never be able to do that. And yet we have got so much to learn from them. And to understand their situations, because they know more about isolation and difficulties in relation to social isolation than we have ever had. So really, I would try to answer your question, Rick, is to encourage both individuals and congregations to seek and to develop global connections, and to be not only open to avenues of service and what we think we might be able to do and contribute, but also very open to learning from others who day to day live in much more difficult and challenging situations. than we do, and to take charity further than just at home.
That's brilliant, Helen. Really helpful. So be curious, be concerned, and be connected were those the three. Really, really helpful for us to think about. James or Peter, do you want to add anything about how congregations could be maybe developing their global awareness or involvement at this time?
The word relationship that Helen used there, I think that for me is absolutely key. And I certainly agree when you look out at the needs around the world and the opportunities to engage in mission in other countries, it can sometimes seem overwhelming. But I think it's called go wide, go deep is being promoted at the minute. The idea that congregations would focus in either on a particular country or a particular type of ministry and really go deep into that and build up relationships. But speaking from the other end, first went to Brazil in 1996. We still have people journeying with us in 2020. And that's all because we began to build a relationship with these churches and different people. And we visited them and we just kept a good working relationship going right through it all. And I think it works because the feedback I get from those congregations is they see God answering prayer. They see that things are working and God is working as they see things developing in the overseas context. And from our context as a missionary family, it's an ongoing interest. It's an old friend getting in touch with us to encourage us and support and whatever. And we just found that so, so helpful. One specific thing that has worked for us here in Portugal because of our European context, and obviously may not be possible for all mission situations, but at the very start of the church plant here in Porto, we had a number of people said, look, we'd like to come out and do something in terms of mission. And we sort of explained, you know, it's not really a situation where you maybe come to do something. There are many situations around the world where we can go and do those very, very important practical things of, you know, building schools and whatever it may be. But here in our context, an urban city, that wasn't the thing. So we invited people to form small teams of two or three people and simply come for a weekend. And we said, come, see, and pray. And we just invited them to come. We walked them around our area. We explained quite a bit about the culture, the context, quite a bit about the spiritual challenges. And through the course of that weekend, we took time to pray for those things. And those groups returned to their own congregations or their individual congregations with their own impressions, with their own understandings. And I think generated in them a living interest for what was going on in their doorstep in Europe. So that has been very, very positive, not so much perhaps for us here, but ultimately for those who are coming, because they go back to Ireland and they begin to reflect on their own context and what are the challenges for us where we are, what are the opportunities for us. The relationship and coming and seeing have been things that have worked very, very well for us. And I think the feedback we get from folks in Ireland is that is working well for them.
And picking up on that prayer idea theme, James, are there ways that people could be praying for you folks right now in what you're doing? Maybe what are some of those things, either prayerfully or practically?
I suppose for us here, it's there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of insecurity. And whilst I recognise that in all of that insecurity and all of that confusion, God, I think, is really shaking the world up and shaking people up. It doesn't make it any less traumatic to go through. And so I guess prayer for us would be prayer that in this context of uncertainty, context of confusion, that as people look for answers, they might find the answers where they need to find them. We work in a very particular context here in Portugal, which is a very religious society. It's a very spiritually dark society. There's a lot of Christianity, but hardly any of Christ in it. And so people are looking for answers and things that will not give them hope. I would ask probably for directive prayer that as we seek to be salt and light, as we seek to point to Christ, that God would enable by his Spirit us to break through this spiritual darkness and break through with what can really bring people some hope and some security for their futures.
Peter, what about for you in terms of prayer or practical support right now?
Yeah, one of the key things is just maintaining sort of relationships, you know, home congregations, just staying in contact, you know, email. A lot of churches at home sent little links into their church services. So I think I've been at more church services in the last 3 months than I have in a long time. So,
it's good to hear, Peter.
You know, it is, you know, so it's always good to hear people doing different different things and I'm praying in. Again, for me, prayer is so important to us being in Nepal. And, you know, we're very aware of many people who pray for us. You know, a lot of people do contact us and ask for prayer points. I have a number of friends who also just phone up. We have sort of like Skype calls where we have a sharing and praying for each other. In terms for sort of the specific needs, I think Nepal overall just needs a blanket of prayer in terms of how it's dealing with the situation. You know, the government of Nepal has locked the whole country down, but actually it really is affecting millions of people. And we're also now getting people who are returning from overseas. So we're just expecting the situation to get worse. I think specifically, you know, for us as a family, we're like everyone else, we're locked down in the same house together. So we're seeing more of each other than maybe we normally do when we go out to school and go to work. And there just is this feeling of, you know, feeling closed in. And also just in terms of the work, you know, there are a lot of difficult situations, a lot of decisions need to be made, particularly over the hospitals and our development work. Just praying for us for wisdom in making those decisions. I think, you know, as sort of Helen was talking about earlier, to sort of getting involved. And just a quick plug for the United Missions in Nepal. I mean, we do have an excellent website which does highlight, you know, all the work which we do in the hospitals and the support that can be done through those.
That's great. Helen, is there any ways you think we could be praying right now?
I think it's quite amazing about how many things that are in common with this lockdown that has brought around the world, like the isolation, like families being together, like people being restricted from going to work. So I think at home we can identify with that. And I think that, you know, using those as prayer points is really good for our global workers. Also would ask that, you know, prayer for the mission department as we try to support. I suppose I've never before had, you know, so many things change like everyone else, but to be available and to be proactive. So how do we together, do I listen? I need to listen more, need to be available more, that the global workers know that we're here. And even though we don't have all the answers, nobody does, it's important that we work together to see what we can and can't do at this difficult time.
Okay. We finish each episode of this podcast by asking each contributor to share something from Scripture that has maybe especially spoken to them in these days. James, if we kick off with you on this.
What I'd like to share is not perhaps a specific verse, but more a concept. And in fact, it's a word that I learned at Belfast Bible College many years ago. I think the word in Hebrew is chesed. But I think it was James McKeown taught us to just think about the hesed. And it's that Hebrew word that we translate, the steadfast love of God. It's God's covenant love. It lasts. It's unchanging. It's powerful. It's faithful. It's true. And we can depend on it totally in every situation. And I guess like many people over these past number of weeks and months, the Psalms have become a real source of help for us as we think about anxiety and pain and loss, confusion, uncertainty. And just helps us bring that all before God as we recall his goodness. And this concept of the chesed or the hesed of God comes, I think, 120 times in the Psalms. And just over this past few weeks in the Sunday, we've been looking at the book of Ruth. And there we see how the covenant love, the steadfast love of God comes into gracious action as Ruth helps Naomi, as Boaz becomes a kinsman redeemer to Naomi and to Ruth. And then all of that obviously points us forward to the redeemer of Christ, who comes to share the agape love of God, the same covenant, powerful, redeeming, dependable, true love, totally unmerited, but richly given. And so I guess in this time of change, God has been encouraging me personally and trying to encourage us as a congregation here just to come and bask in his steadfast love, to trust it, to know it, and in his strength to try and show the same selfless, powerful, active love to others around us who are in various needs, emotional, spiritual, material needs. And I guess that's just something that I owe James McKeown and his hayshed a lot of thanks for.
Helen, do you want to share?
Peter will know that about this, Sam, because it's certainly very associated with Nepal. Psalm 121, and particularly the opening verse, "I lift up my eyes to the mountains, where does my help come from?" And that was a psalm that really encouraged me when I lived and worked in Nepal through the changes and the crises I experienced there. And that has been brought back to me in this crisis. As I do my daily walk, I can see them more in mountains, and maybe they're not just quite the same as the Himalayas, but they certainly do the same job in that they make me look up, they make me lift my eyes from my feet to the mountains. And that makes me think of the psalm. And God has really blessed me in those walks of saying, you know, where does my help come from? It comes from you. And then the other sort of scripture that has been coming back to me as well has been the scripture that drew me to Christ in the first place when I gave my life to him. And that's Matthew 6, verse 33. And in this crisis, that has come back to me, and verse 34. And I was really prompted to read it from the message, and I will read it. "Steep your life in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. Don't worry about missing out. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Give your entire attention to what God is doing right now, and don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes." And those have just been so reassuring words to me personally and in my work as I try to support the global workers, that yeah, actually all of that is so true, and he is faithful and in control.
Peter?
Really, when I was thinking about this, Psalm 11 really has been on my mind for a wee while. I'm just going to read, I mean, it's seven verses, but I'm just going to read verse 1, 4, and 7. "In the Lord I take refuge. How then can you say, flee like a bird to your mountain?" Verse 4, "The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord is on his heavenly throne. He observes everyone on earth. His eyes examine them." And then the final verse of Psalm 11. "For the Lord is righteous. He loves justice. The upright will see his face." It really just spoke to me because it's like we're in a crisis, and actually so was King David. I mean, his life was threatened, and actually his advisors and supporters would have given him some well-meaning but actually demoralizing advice, which was just flee. I mean, the life of the king is important, but their suggestion was that he should just flee to the mountain. He should just try and escape from it all. Again, David's attention is drawn to the High King of Heaven, who is in residence. So he's not in flight. He's not trying to escape. He's not trying to flee. And the description of his temple is that this is a place which has foundations which are utterly secure. I mean, the psalm opens and closes with the Lord and emphasizes his righteous character. And for me, at this time, I mean, the opening line reassures me as to where my safety lies and where my refuge is. And the closing line actually challenges me just to keep on going and how I live and what I'm focusing on. And really that whole idea of justice. I know living and working in Nepal, the one thing in, when you're working with people with poverty, is just the injustice of it. And then when you add in another crisis on top of it, then they intersect together to further put people down. So it just encourages me, you know, rely on God and keep on working for what he finds and what he loves.
Yeah, absolutely. And we commend each of you to the prayers of the listeners. We thank you for what you're doing on behalf of the church as well in each of your various roles. And we hope that you have enjoyed this look over the last couple of episodes of both local and global issues. And we thank each of our guests for sharing with us. We're going to be moving the podcast to a fortnightly rhythm over the summer months. And so we'll be back in 2 weeks' time to think about what summer ministry might look like in our congregations. But until then, thanks for listening to These Three Remain, stories of faith, hope and love from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. See you next time.